Translation: by serving the feet of the spiritual master, one is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead, who is the unchangeable enemy of the Madhu demon, and whose service vanquishes one's material distresses. Please repeat. By serving the feet of the spiritual master, one is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead, who is the unchangeable enemy of the Madhu demon, and whose service vanquishes one's material distresses. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The association of a bona fide spiritual master, like the sage Maitreya, can be of absolute help in achieving transcendental attachment for the direct service of the Lord. The Lord is the enemy of the Madhu demon, or in other words, He is the enemy of the suffering of His pure devotee. The word rati rasa is significant in this verse. Service to the Lord is rendered in different transcendental mellows relationship: neutral, active, friendly, parental, and conjugal. A living entity in the liberated position of transcendental service to the Lord becomes attracted to one of the above-mentioned mellows. And when one is engaged in transcendental loving service to the Lord, one's service attachment in the material world is automatically vanquished, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 2:59, Rasya Rajam Rasopyasya Param Dristva Nivartate. And the translation again: by serving the feet of the spiritual master, one is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead, who is the unchangeable enemy of the Madhu demon, and whose service vanquishes one's material distresses. Om Ajana Timrandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayarupa Gadamayam Dadati Swabhatantikam. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai, Hare Krishna. I just wanted to mention, when I was saying I was closing my eyes trying to learn the verse, I do that giving class because some devotees in Mayapur told me that when Srila Prabhupada used to come there to give class, and I don't think he did this in other places, at least I'm not aware of it, but when he used to go to Mayapur to give class, for whatever reason, he chose Mayapur. But when he would chant the verse, sometimes he would chant the verse for virtually the whole class and literally just speak on the purport or on the verse for, a few minutes. And the net result of that was that the devotees, obviously listening to the class, that they would effectively be learning a new verse every day. You know, it was kind of interesting, so... But I'm not aware that Prabhupada did that anywhere else necessarily, that he spent. But they said that he would spend like literally 75% of the class just chanting the verse and the devotees continuously repeating it. this also is a nice verse. I don't know. I think it's just the regular sequence of verses here at the manor. But it is a nice verse following on from yesterday and Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day. And I do want to really focus on that as a continuation of the glorification of Srila Prabhupada. But I will just speak a little bit on the verse. By serving the feet of the spiritual master, one is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead. So transcendental ecstasy by serving the feet of the spiritual master. And as we were speaking yesterday evening upstairs in Srila Prabhupada's rooms, the evening part of the homages from the devotees, I can recognize some faces that were there, so you'll probably remember this. One of the devotees, when she was speaking, I can't remember her name, I think she was a Bengali lady, actually. I think she was a Bengali lady. I think I recognized the Bengali accent. Ki hoiche. So she just mentioned when she was speaking, she was basically separating Srila Prabhupada from other spiritual masters. And so when we read this verse, by serving the feet of the spiritual master, now obviously Srila Prabhupada is a spiritual master, and you know, yesterday we had many dozens of Srila Prabhupada's disciples present for the festival. So Prabhupada is a spiritual master. But he's also an acharya. So if this is the benefit that's been described here, you know, transcendental ecstasy, that word's an interesting word. Obviously, it's an English word, but I don't ever really remember it being used much or being so aware of it being used in everyday language until I met the devotees, you know, and then you read about ecstasy. And it's a very high description of pleasure, enjoyment, like it's ecstasy. It's so high and it's so elevated in it, from an English language point of view, to describe joy and pleasure, that they even named a drug after it. So, you know, it's a very powerful word. So that's what you get by serving the feet of the spiritual master. So we can only consider that what benefit is coming from serving the feet of not just a spiritual master, but an acharya, and the founder acharya of ISKCON, but essentially of the vehicle to spread Krishna consciousness for the first time outside of the borders, if you like, of modern-day India. So by serving Srila Prabhupada, and then the other thing that's said here is that you get transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead, who is the unchangeable enemy of the Madhu demon, and whose service vanquishes one's material distresses. So obviously, when you read that, we can only hope that we're on the side of the second part of that sentence, that the service of vanquishing our material distresses, as opposed to being, you know, in the Madhu part of that sentence and being the unchangeable enemy. And Prabhupada is interesting, unchangeable enemy of the Madhu demon, because we do read that from the verse from the Bhagavad Gita where it talks about the Madhu demon and in relation to Arjuna. And it is described that it's that demon is a demon of doubt, and it's vanquishing that demon of doubt. But there is also a pastime about that Madhu demon that I'll say a few words on shortly. But again, I was just thinking when reading this this morning that, you know, Krishna consciousness, it's so wonderful, it's so extraordinary, you know, so sublime, so precious, and it's free. It's completely free. You know, normally when something is so wonderful and sublime and extraordinary and precious, you will pay an absolute fortune for it. You know, what's the name of that jeweler's, that famous jeweler's? The blue one? The blue logo? Tiffany's. Like, you know, I remember the first time I was introduced to that shop, the first and only time, I stress, that I was introduced. You know, you can't walk out the door without parting with, you know, whatever it is, you know, more than is in your bank account. So anything that's precious and glorious and wonderful, our experience is you pay an awful lot of money for it. But Krishna consciousness is absolutely free. So here's something that's so precious, so glorious, so wonderful, that's completely free, yet it's so rare. Can you imagine? And I kind of look to the ladies, and maybe that's an inappropriate thing to do. I don't know. But, you know, if Tiffany's told you today, you got a message on your WhatsApp, you know, all Tiffany's stores in London, you know, from what time are we now? 8 o'clock. From, you know, 9:30 to 10:30 everything is free. Just walk in, take whatever you want. I'm anticipating an exodus from this room, right? Just to make sure you get to the store before it closes at 10:30 or whatever it might be. So there is no comparison between Krishna consciousness and what you will get in a store like Tiffany's. Krishna consciousness is free, but it's so rare. We heard yesterday, Amita was saying there were 63 million people in the UK in 1999. He said he remembered that because he said that up to that point, the UK Yatra had distributed 63 million books of Srila Prabhupada up to that point. And that coincided with what the population was. I think the population must be over 65 million now, whatever it is. But we've 65 million people. I'm guessing that we have Bhagavatam classes taking place in the UK now. I'd imagine that we have them taking place in, around about maybe a dozen ISKCON temples in this country, something like that, of which Bhaktivedanta Manor is the biggest. So if I look at the room, I was counting this morning actually during Mangal Arati, which was interesting, and there was a pretty even split between men and women in the temple room. It was interesting, you know. It was, 18, 19 on each side, you know, that was the kind of figure. So that's under 40 people. I don't know, let's say there's 40 people in the room right now. So 40 people in the biggest temple that we have. So you multiply 40 by 10, you get 400. So you can be certain that in some of our temples, I won't name them, but there's probably only the speaker and one person listening to the speaker in the class. But we'll be generous and we'll say there's 40 in each of our temples that's holding Bhagavatam class. So you get 400 people. We had Sharmila, she's not here now, she's an actuary, she'd be able to do the maths for me. But if you divide 65 million by 400, I would love to know what sort of fraction you get. You're going to get an absolutely minuscule fraction. So this thing that is so extraordinary, precious, wonderful, that brings ecstasy, transcendental ecstasy to the receiver and is completely free, is only attracting 400 people on a daily basis to hear Srimad Bhagavatam class. Manushyanam Sahasreshu, we know that verse, you know, that out of many thousands among men. But it's always something that really intrigues me. Of course, you can argue, well, there is a price to pay, not a monetary price, but a price of giving up your sense gratification. And even from that point of view, I think that we should consider that we shouldn't impose that on newcomers, you know, because it can become actually a barrier for them to actually take to Krishna consciousness if they feel that they suddenly, you know, have to go from whatever their life is to becoming the life of, you know, the most fixed up monk or monkess on the planet. Because somehow or another, we've got to get this message of how wonderful this is and that it's absolutely free and it's the best thing that you can do without presenting to them any potential barriers that might discourage them from doing that. Anyway, just wanted to make that point. The story of the Madhu Demon, just because it's referenced here, we can read it in the Mahabharata, and Srila Prabhupada also, and I saved that somewhere, he also mentions it in the seventh canto, which I think I have here. I thought I had it here, and now I don't have it here. There you go, just see. So the Madhu Demon, this goes back to the time when Lord Vishnu is lying on the causal ocean, and the lotus stem emanates from his navel, and then the lotus flower is produced from the stem of that lotus stem. The flower comes, and then Lord Brahma, the first created being, manifests from or is born, if you like, of the lotus flower, and Vishnu, as we know, gives him the service, the transcendental service of creating the material cosmos, and while this is happening, Lord Vishnu is still, you know, in slumber, in his yoga nidra pastime, in slumber. And, you know, many things emanate from Lord Vishnu, as we know, different things from his nostrils, etc. So one of the things that emanates is earwax from his ears. And from that earwax come these two ferocious, they're described as ferocious demons. Kaitaba is one and Madhu is the other. And they then perform, as many of these demons do, as we know from the pastimes, different pastimes, the Ravana and Hiranyakashipu, etc. Many of these demons then perform, because they're very intelligent personalities, they perform great penances and austerities. And through the performance of those penances and austerities, they get boons. And surprise, surprise, you know, the boon that they all kind of want in one form or another. And, you know, because I can so relate to this, you know, I think, oh, you got to get rid of that demoniac mentality. But the boon that they all want is they want freedom from death. They do not want to be affected by time. Time, you know, it's just everybody that thinks about it, at least, you know, in that sense, unless you're completely Krishna conscious, doesn't kind of like it. That ticking clock, we know what that ticking clock means, you know, and it's like, you know, and it never stops. You can't stop it. You just, there's nothing you can do, you know, nothing, not even for a second, you know, all the billions of whatever, pounds that you might have, you cannot stop time by even one single second. So the boon they wanted for performing all these austerities that they got from Lakshmi Deva, I think, they got the boon from Lakshmi Devi, was that they could choose the time that they would die, that they would leave their bodies. And if I ask everybody in the room, if you had a boon that you could choose the time that you leave your body, I think you probably would never make that choice, right? You know, they, well, okay, I'll stay. You know, I'll stay as a 16-year-old. You know, as a Navayovana, that kind of age. Maybe 16 is a little too young in our lives, but you know, maybe 21, maybe. Anyway, and then I'll stop the clock. So that's what they wanted. That's what they got. The boon they got was that they could choose their time of leaving. So then what happened was, as a result of that boon, they became proud, not so much proud, more arrogant than proud, than pride, more sort of obnoxiousness than arrogance, you know, more sort of, you know, I am invincible now than just simple pride kind of thing, you know. I can choose the time that I'm going to die. Wow, I am now supreme and invincible like that. So that's what that was the boon that they got. And then, of course, once you get a boon like that and then you develop those qualities, which, you know, naturally, you know, particularly if you're not Krishna conscious, you're going to develop those qualities. You're going to think you're invincible. They started becoming a real problem. And the first thing they did was they attacked Lord Brahma, you know, the first created being who's given this service of creating the cosmic universes, etc. They attack him. And one of the things they did, they stole the four Vedas from Lord Brahma. And that's also interesting in the context of Srila Prabhupada's Disappearance Day and glorifying Srila Prabhupada, that one of the biggest contributions, Prabhupada made so many contributions, my gosh, but one of the biggest, if not arguably the biggest contribution, is a bit like who's Krishna's best devotee, you know, what's Srila Prabhupada's best contribution? I mean, you know, hey, you know, we don't like to make distinctions, but certainly we can argue that one of his best contributions would have been book distribution. Well, not so much the distribution, although we couldn't have the distribution, but, you know, the translation of the books, etc. So incredible thing. So it's kind of like that. You know, these demons have stolen the four Vedas. Now I look at Guru Shakti, I look at Vishwambhara, you know, stalwart, long-term book distributors of the UK Yatra, still going strong and distributing huge amounts of Srila Prabhupada's books. You can also get grief when you're out there. Some people don't like it. You know, some people react really aggressively. Of course, we have to be a little careful on that one as well, that we shouldn't be too aggressive in stopping them, you know, putting our foot on their foot. You know, I'll take my foot off your foot when you take all my books. You know, so obviously, you know, but just in the normal course of events, when we're being ladies and gentlemen on the street and we're approaching people like that, you can get some very aggressive reactions, you know, from people. So that's what's happening here. It was an aggressive reaction from these demons, and they stole the four Vedas from Lord Brahma. Jai, Shishi, Radha Gokulananda. Kijai. And so Lord Brahma then was really distressed, primarily because they'd stolen the Vedas, but also because he was being attacked. And he was really distressed. So he approached Lord Vishnu, but Lord Vishnu was sleeping. You know, he was in his yoga nidra pastime. He was sleeping, and Lord Brahma couldn't wake him. But fortunately, Lakshmi Devi was awake. You know, the wife was awake while the husband was sleeping. Lakshmi Devi was awake. So Lord Brahma approached Lakshmi Devi, and presented the problem to her, and she went to Lord Vishnu, and she woke Lord Vishnu up out of his slumber. She woke Lord Vishnu up. And then Lord Brahma was able to explain the situation to Lord Vishnu, what had actually happened, and the Veda's been stolen. And then Lord Vishnu manifested as in his higher Griva form. He manifested in his higher Griva form, the wonderful horse incarnation, and then grappled with these two demons, Madhu and Kaitaba, and wrestled back the Vedas. So the Vedas were retrieved. But because they had that boon, which is also interesting in terms of, for us as devotees, that, you know, they had that boon. Even the Lord Vishnu, Krishna, honored that boon. So just for us as well, we live in this world, we should honor, you know, certain things, certainly the laws of the land we should honor, you know, and other things. You know, and we should take that example there, that these are just demons, you know, and yeah, they've wangled a boon like that, but it's, you know, in one sense, Krishna could, or Lord Vishnu could just dismiss it, but he didn't dismiss it, you know, he acknowledged that. So that was still a problem. He hadn't killed them. He just got the Vedas back. But then he entered a conversation with them, and they had got that boon from Lakshmi Devi, his consort, and Lord Vishnu said, well, listen, you know, you two guys are really super powerful guys, yet, you know, Lakshmi Devi honored you with a boon, because the very least you can do is reciprocate with that favor that she bestowed upon you. And, you know, Lord Vishnu managed to convince them of that. And then they said, okay, you know, that makes sense. So we'll give you a boon too, to Lord Vishnu. And they said, what's your boon? What boon do you want? And of course, Lord Vishnu said, the boon I want is that you don't have your boon anymore. And that's what happened. And then they were vanquished, you know, and they that was the end of them. So going back then to this point about protection, so in that Lord Brahma was protected because of his service to Lord Vishnu, in that, even though, you know, you still get, you know, he was protected, but he it's not that he was free from any inconvenience or free from any discomfort or free from any difficulty. So again, the same for us as devotees, and we just have to look at Srila Prabhupada's life. So now I'll reflect a little bit more directly on Srila Prabhupada. We just have to look at his life and the difficulties that he had in order to fulfill the predictions of of the previous acharyas, etc., for him to when we were hearing some of those stories yesterday coming to the West, it wasn't easy for him. It was actually incredibly difficult. And even in the very beginning, we heard yesterday, it was referenced as well, that, you know, Prabhupada's initial experience, a little bit like Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, but Prabhupada's initial experience of sadhus was very disappointing for him and very discouraging. And literally Narendranath Mulak had to force him to come and visit Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj in 1922. And then when he visited Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he was immediately convinced, you know, because he was seeing a real sadhu, and he was completely convinced. And that's that's essentially when the whole thing started. In one of the lectures when Prabhupada is glorifying Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, there are many, many lectures when he does that. And I'm going to talk about another one here actually as well. But I'm going to just let me reference the first one. In one of those talks when he gives on either Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj's appearance day or disappearance day, I can't remember, he quotes this is it a verse or is it just a... Anyway, he references the Rajaputra... Chiramjiva, Rajaputra Chiramjiva, Muniputra Majiva, Jivava Marova Majiva Ma Maro. He quotes that verse. And basically what's that? That's describing, if you like, you know, Krishna's mercy manifesting in different ways, I guess. But it's describing that the first line, the Jiva Putra, sorry, the Rajaputra, is referring to a prince or a person in royalty like that. And the translation is that basically you should never die. And the reason that the prince should never die or the royal person should never die is because when you have that role, that position, which you're all very familiar with here in the UK, you have the wonderful monarchy. or otherwise. It's kind of the life of luxury. You know, they have to work in one sense, you know, and I'm sure they prefer not to have to always be going around meeting people and all that kind of thing. But still, it's kind of the lap of luxury, you know, and you have so much wealth and so many places and to live and the whole kind of thing. So this verse is saying you should never die because you've got it great at the moment. And you're enjoying all this opulence and all this sense gratification. So you've got it good from the material point of view at the moment. But because you're enjoying so much, when you do die, you're going to have to pay for that. So better you just don't die. And then the next line is Muniputra is talking about a Muni, or somebody who is performing austerities, basically. And that line is saying, you should die immediately because you're performing all these austerities. You're getting up early in the morning, you know, you're meditating. It's like devotees, like the devotees. You're performing all these austerities like that. And that can be kind of tough from one point of view, from the material point of view. The material body can be quite unforgiving. We were mentioning yesterday during the festival that one of the things that I never saw in a temple room when I first joined the Hare Krishna movement, and I didn't see in a temple room. In fact, I can remember I think it was Dublin, you know, when this first idea of bringing chairs into a temple room was floated by somebody. Maybe we should have a few chairs, because some people are getting older and they're having difficulty, you know. It's like, nah, we can't be chairs, nah, Maya, chairs are Maya, you know, we can't bring in chairs. You know? Now, of course, you know, there's chairs in every temple room in ISKCON you go into. There's chairs everywhere like that. Because, you know, the body is unforgiving. And the body, and as we get older, every single day, just to be a real cheerful speaker of the Bhagavatam today, every single day it just gets worse and worse. We've everything to look forward to. Oh, God. So that line is saying, better you die now, because it's kind of difficult what you're doing, but you've accrued so much, pious benefits and spiritual benefits through your austerities that when you die, you're going to go to a much better place. So better you just die now. And then I'll go to the last line before I go to the line I want to talk about Prabhupada. So the last line is saying, don't live, don't die. Don't live or don't die. And that's referring to butchers. Now, not just literally butchers, the trade of people who are engaged in the trade of butchering, but of course that includes them as well. But it's basically anybody who is committing violence in any way, you know, on other living entities like that. Don't live, don't die. Because by living, you'll continue to inflict this pain and suffering and misery on other living entities. That's just what you're doing by living. So you shouldn't live. But Jesus, don't die, because when you die, you're going to go to the darkest regions of creation because of the results of the pain and suffering and misery that you're inflicting on other people. They're really stuck. They're really super stuck, you know, people who, you know, but the word that's used is butchers like that. You know, years ago here in the UK, and I think you can Google this, and I think I'm correct in saying this, and maybe there's even some remnants of it still here, although maybe not. But years ago in the UK, butchers could not sit on juries in like murder cases. They couldn't sit on them. They were disqualified because the logic was that they're so used to killing things and seeing blood and dealing with that whole horrible kind of environment that they are desensitized. So therefore, on a murder trial, they wouldn't be sufficiently sensitive to the kind of person who's been murdered because they're kind of engaged in that all the time, which is kind of an interesting thing. So that's the third line. Oh, the last line. But then the third line is referring to a transcendental personality. And that line is the exact opposite of the fourth line. And that line is saying, it doesn't matter whether you live, and it doesn't matter whether you die. Living, you're in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When you die, you'll be in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it doesn't matter whether you live or whether you die. And Prabhupada was speaking in one of these classes about Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, and he was quoting that, referencing the likes of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj and the previous acharyas. And for us now, we can reference that exactly with Srila Prabhupada, you know, because he was that person that it absolutely didn't matter where he was, what he was doing. He was just constantly thinking of Krishna. You know, just extraordinary his constant meditation, you know, to rise every morning at 2 o'clock, going to bed at best 10 o'clock, oftentimes 11 o'clock, because he would be up late preaching and dealing with different things. You know, so 3-4 hours maximum sleep a night. How many of us can put our hands up and say that we can live that life for 1 month, getting no more than 4 hours sleep out of 24? I mean, I don't advise it, by the way, because I think it's extremely unhealthy for most of us to do that. It's actually extremely unhealthy. You know, there are many, many health conditions that they associate with a lack of sleep. You know, so really, we shouldn't force ourselves to do that, by the way. I'm not advocating that, but I'm just glorifying Srila Prabhupada in the context that he was doing that every single day. It's just an extraordinary thing, you know. And then, anyway, we know all the different things. But what I just wanted to just reference a few things. What time do I have to stop, actually? 8:30? Okay, let me really race through these things. So there's a verse in the Padma Purana that states, Idam stanam parichaja videsham gamyate maya. I mentioned this briefly yesterday. It's a conversation between Narada Muni and Bhakti Devi, where Bhakti Devi is saying, and this is thousands of years ago, thousands upon thousands of years ago, that this conversation took place. And Bhakti Devi is saying, I will leave this place, Vrindavan, and I will travel to faraway lands to preach the glories of Bhagavatam. Now, as I say, that's thousands of years ago. You know, before the advent of Kali Yuga, we're going back thousands of years. I will leave this place, Vrindavan, travel to faraway lands to preach the glories of Bhagavatam. Nobody did that for thousands of years until Srila Prabhupada did it. And when you think about it, those three things, they're the three things that Bhakti Devi says, none different than Radharani, by the way, that she says, the three things, I will leave this place, Vrindavan. Where did Srila Prabhupada leave from? He left Vrindavan. It's amazing, you know, we all think, or at least I think a lot of us think, what a nice place to go, you know, to leave this world, Vrindavan. It's considered, of course, Prabhupada did end up leaving in Vrindavan, but, you know, we think that's a real boon for us if somehow or another we manage to leave this world in Vrindavan. Prabhupada was in his mid-60s, when he left Vrindavan. Most of us are thinking, God, you know, it's mid-60s, time, clock's ticking, you know, how long have I got? Maybe I should go to Vrindavan. He left Vrindavan in his mid-60s to start this movement. Anyway, I'll leave this place, Vrindavan, because I've only got a few minutes. Go to faraway lands, stick a pin through the globe. Always say this when I'm quoting this verse. Stick a pin through the globe. Stick it from Delhi or Vrindavan straight through the globe. You'll actually come out around Bermuda, actually, just as a point of information, because I actually did this. There's an app you can go on the internet, and you can stick a pin through the globe from any part and see where it comes out on the other side. So if you stick it in from Vrindavan, you come out, I think, in Bermuda, you know. But basically, that's America. That's North America. So Srila Prabhupada couldn't have gone to a further away land than America. Just like for us, it's kind of Australia, New Zealand, if we stick the pin in. But for Prabhupada, it's America, North America. So I leave this place, Vrindavan, is where he left from. I'll go to faraway lands. He went to the furthest away land, North America. And I will preach the glories of Bhagavatam. What did Prabhupada bring with him, other than his clothes and a few other bits and pieces? Trunks of Srimad Bhagavatams. That's what he brought with him. And then, of course, he translated the Bhagavatam, etc. So, wow, how can we not conclude that this verse is referencing Srila Prabhupada? Then you have the Abhinam Sankirtan verse, Tatikshnau Kadaya Laya, and then Yadi Papi Chadi, that Lord Chaitanya is saying, I will root out with the sword of Sankirtan, I will root out in the demoniac hearts of the living entities, you know, all their anartas, etc., and all the maya. I will root it out with the sword of Sankirtan. But, Yadi Papi Chadi, if any of them escape and go to faraway lands, So again, this faraway lands thing. If any of them, because Lord Chaitanya preached in modern day India. So if any of them escape and go to faraway lands, then I will send my Senapati Bhakta to rescue them. Again, you know, no one had done that, you know, until Srila Prabhupada did it. And now I just want to finish by, where are my glasses? Just want to finish, just fly down to this, wherever I go. This is just a little PowerPoint presentation I have on this subject. Just want to remember what I'm doing here. Oh yeah, so this is on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj's disappearance day in 1968 in Los Angeles. So Prabhupada has only been here for two and a half years, that kind of time. And he's in Los Angeles. So these are all young devotees that he's talking to, you know. And he says to them, I was born in a different family, but my Guru Maharaj, I was born in a different family, my Guru Maharaj was born in a different family. Who knew that I would come to his protection? And again, going back to Narendranath Mulak, who played an incredibly important role in this whole pastime, you know, because he literally forced Prabhupada to come and meet Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. So Prabhupada is saying, who knew that we would meet? Who knew that I would come under his protection? And then he says, and who knew that I would come to America? You know, and that's also interesting, because nowadays we zip all over the world all the time. And of course, we're suffering the consequences of that with climate change and exploiting material nature and all the reaction that's coming as a result of that. But we zip all over the world all the time. I mean, I personally feel guilty about it. I can understand Prabhupada doing it. You know, obviously, he was starting the Sankirtan mission. He was a founder Acharya. You know, it was essential, whatever. But sometimes I think, do we really need to be zipping here and zipping there all the time? You know, could we not do more? Anyway, I won't get stuck on that just for this time being. So, but in those days, in the mid-60s, for an Indian person to travel from India to America wasn't a common thing. We didn't have, you know, SleazyJet and the Ryanair and all these different things in those days where you just go online and book a ticket, bang, you're on the plane. You know, it wasn't like that. You know, I don't know for some of the older people in the room. I'm sorry I looked at you there, Shrikama. That was purely accidental. But, you know, I don't know what age you were when you first got on an aeroplane. You know, but, you know, anyway, whatever. Some of us would have been, you know, in our late teens, early 20s, even maybe later. Yeah, complete luxury. And it was a big thing, you know. If you went to an airport in those days, it was like, you know, you were like a VIP, you know. Now you're like kind of herded like animals, you know. I'm online, I start saying relative things. But, you know, that's why I do my best to avoid one particular airline, I won't name them then, one particular airline that just happens to be from the country that I'm from, you know, because it's incredible, you know, before the thing is even, the plane that you're getting on has even landed, they're putting you through the gate, and for the next half an hour, they've got the whole passengers all just on the stairs waiting for the, it's just like, well, yeah, people, you know. So, but in those days, yeah, you were a VIP because this was a rare thing. It was a rare thing, and therefore you were a VIP. So it wasn't common. So Prabhupada's saying, who knew that I would come to America? And then who knew that you American boys and girls would come to me? We read this morning, whoever was reading the Leelamrita, you know, Prabhupada says, this movement started me sitting down in Tompkins Square Park. Prabhupada's on his own with a pair of cartels. I mean, let's face it. Sometimes, I mean, I discourage devotees. You know, you get some devotees who like to go out and Harinam on their own. And I kind of discourage it. I say, no, I don't think that's an attractive thing for people to see one person, you know, particularly when they got odd socks, you know, and this, that, and the other, whatever. You know, it's better to go out in at least three or four, you know, of a Harinam party. But Prabhupada sat on his own in Tompkins Square Park with the cartels playing. So he says, who knew that you would come? These are all Krishna's arrangements. We cannot understand how things are taking place. And of course, you know, there's that wonderful verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Nayasha Kahichid Rajan, where Bhishma Dev is explaining to Yudhisthira, who's despondent after the Battle of Kurukshetra for all the destruction and what's happened, etc., etc. And he says, no one knows the plan of the Lord, even though great sages have meditated on it for millennia, they are none the wiser. So we don't know the plan of the Lord proper, but we dive in with faith, you know, that Krishna has a plan and he will look after us. And then Prabhupada talks about in 1936 in Bombay, he was doing some business and he wrote a letter back to Santa Maharaj, you know, and he was writing a letter because he was feeling despondent himself that he was sort of not in the inner circle. The inner circle with the brahmacharis and other sannyasis of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, and you know, they didn't have any jobs, they didn't have to look after family, but Prabhupada did, he had his business, he was away, and so Prabhupada was feeling a little sort of out in the cold, for want of a better word of putting it. And he says, "My dear master, your other disciples, your brahmachari sannyasis, they are rendering you direct service. I'm a householder, I cannot live with you, I cannot serve you nicely, so I don't know, how can I serve you?" And on the 13th of December, so that's literally 12 days later. So, you know, in those days, no email, so you write the letter. You don't even type it, you know, you write it, put it in the envelope, and it gets delivered. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj obviously got it and responded immediately. And he says, "I'm very glad to receive your letter. I think you should try to push on our movement in English. That will do good to you and to the people who will help you." This is, again, this theme, you know, of expansion. We were talking yesterday upstairs that I was saying that, you know, why don't they have a statue, at least a statue of Prabhupada in Calcutta? Why don't they have them when you come out of the airport and they have all these other people, you know? Yeah, okay, I don't want to demean the other people that they're sort of promoting as famous Bengalis. Why the hell haven't they got Prabhupada, you know? So they'll be forced to glorify Prabhupada the more people take to Prabhupada's movement, because sheer numbers will dictate that they will have to do that. So this is what Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj is saying. Push on this movement. It will be good for you, Srila Prabhupada or Abhay Charan. It will be good for you, but it will also be good for the people who will help you. That's all of us, you know, pushing on the movement like that. And on the 31st of December, so 2 weeks after Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj wrote that letter, he passed away. He left this world. Incredible thing. But Prabhupada says, "But I took that order of my spiritual master very seriously. If we strictly try to serve the spiritual master," and again, what to speak of the spiritual master, if we strictly try to serve the acharya, the founder acharya, his order, if we strictly try to do that, then Krishna will give us all facilities. One lady asked yesterday of Rancho or Amita or Shakti Gopal Prabhu, one of them yesterday, you know, "But your Prabhupada disciples, how can we do it?" No, it's not, it's totally irrelevant, you know. Just like Prabhupada was kind of the outsider in his kind of Sangha, because he was the kind of Grihasa and he wasn't, it doesn't matter, you know, if we sincerely serve, Krishna will give us all facilities. Prabhupada is saying that crystal clear. I better stop there, because otherwise I'm abusing time. I don't know if I can ask, is anyone any comment or question? I guess we can do that at least for one, if anybody has a comment or question. No? So you all agree with every word that I spoke? Fantastic. So that means the Hare Krishna movement is just going to flourish and flourish and flourish, because we're all going to accept Srila Prabhupada's message here. And when I come here next time, there won't be 40 people in the room. There'll be 400, right? Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day celebrations ki. Gaur Premanandi. Hari Hari Bol Jai.